Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Off and rolling on a Thursday, the first day of May. Summer is on the way. May 1st, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm one day away from being 30 years of age. I'm alongside the executive producer of the show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, what should we do on the show to celebrate my 30th tomorrow? Is there anything in particular that we need to do?
I don't know. I wish you would have prepped me for this question. On the spot, I'm not sure.
We put each other on the spot all the time. This is talk radio.
Brother. I'll have to come up with a few different things.
Okay.
I don't know why my instinct was embarrassing things for you, though.
That's fine.
My gut was immediately like, how can
I'm a very self-deprecating person.
Dave.
I don't take myself too seriously.
Correct.
So
it's one of my favorite things about you.
I'm fine with that.
You know what you could do, though? You could come to Hampline tonight at 7 p.m. to celebrate early and play General Knowledge Trivia with me. Beer, pizza, free beer. I could probably get you a free beer, pizza, trivia, 7 p.m.
A singular free beer.
And beer.
That's not bad.
And beer.
What about a free pizza?
Maybe. I would have to cash in my free pizza that I get.
Okay.
But that could be my present to you. I am willing.
They have nice wood-fired, nice crispy pizzas.
Delicious.
Beautiful.
Delicious.
Beautiful. You can't, in Memphis,
Buongiorno.
I know some people may disagree with me. Most people should agree with me. Hard to find like a super quality pie in Memphis all the time.
Correct. We have a couple great spots.
We do.
All those and Garibaldi's.
I'll be honest. Like, when it comes to sort of the chain, and I know it's more of a chain, but like, Rotolo's? You ever been to Rotolo's?
So, little Gabe Kuhn Show Inside Baseball. That's the first place you and I met when I was meeting with you to come back to the radio station from Rhodes. Remember, that's where we went. That's one of the places we went.
Yeah.
We went to Huey's and then
Huey's
we went there.
And then, yeah.
Or maybe that's where I was when you called me to tell me I got the job.
Maybe I was going
to
say. I think it was just Huey's.
I think I was there.
I was confused.
When you called me.
I don't have that great of a memory, but I don't think we met at Rotolo's. I think it was Huey's.
It was Huey's. I got the call when I was at Rotolo's.
Yes. But Rotolo's. What's it? Hog and Hominy?
They make
some nice pies over there.
They do.
Beautiful pies.
Venice Kitchen?
Venice Kitchen, solid.
Not bad.
Very solid. I like their food in general.
Venice Kitchen's delicious.
Also, before I lay out the show, some radio host, sports talk radio host I am, just realized the Kentucky Derby's coming up on Saturday, telling on myself. Just realized it. Kentucky Derby coming up on Saturday. My gosh, you know who the favorite is, though? This is kind of cool.
No.
Favorite, journalism.
Journalism is the favorite?
Journalism running out of the eighth spot. I believe that's correct. Correct me if I'm wrong out there, listeners.
The horse's name is
journalism? Journalism. So we, you know, Big J journalism, we should be rooting for journalism, who's, I believe, 3-1 out of the eighth spot to win the Kentucky Derby. So we'll see how that goes. We have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. As far as guests are concerned, Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian at 5 o'clock, also from the Jeff Calkins Show. And then 6 o'clock, we need to rehash the NFL draft. And I want to take a look forward at some of the early mock drafts, way too early mock drafts for 2026 with Kyron. Connor, there's one name on there that I get, but I don't. It's a Manning. Arch Manning, for a lot of these drafts, is a top 5 pick. These are way too early mock drafts. Is that, am I insane for thinking like we're way out over our skis on that one? What are we doing?
I think you are correct in that. It is premature. However, in the art, quote unquote art, of list making, it absolutely makes sense why he's
perfect.
A top value.
It's perfect it's for perfect. The clicking and right. the and the checking out.
The clicking
the analysis and the pros and cons. People want to see those.
Pretty good.
But like I don't even know how you put together an analysis of the kid. He started two games. How do you do that? And one of them was UL Monroe.
He could run though.
But here's the thing. Like there are also more physically talented quarterbacks than Arch Manning coming into the NFL next year that could potentially go to the NFL next year. Drew Aller's 6'6", 240. I'm not saying he's unbelievable, but when you talk about physical talent, kid was a 5-star, he's got a good arm, all that. Lenora Sellers from South Carolina is mentioned in these conversations. Physically talented as hell, 6'3", 240, can run like a 4'4", 4'5". So I don't know. I could see it and I understand why he's up there for Heisman odds, but when we're talking about number one overall picks in the NFL draft, I have to see, like, game film. We don't have any of that. But we'll talk with Kyron at 6 about that. But on top of that, we're going to have NBA playoff discussion. Lakers get knocked out. And I know you hate this just like I do because it just – some of these things – and the one I saw today was egregious. It was with CBS Sports' Ashley Nicole Moss. But John Morant, trade rumors. Even though at exit interviews, I am under the impression, I thought we were all under the impression, that Zach Kleiman was basically doubling down on the idea, we're not trading the guy.
The one that was offered today made me throw up in my mouth. And the reasoning behind it made absolutely no sense.
Well, I looked.
Because when you think of John Morant, shooting is not what comes to mind.
And it was the Orlando Magic.
and to fix the Magic shooting. I was like, what?
What?
Who?
And then also you saw Jalen Suggs, Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner still in the starting lineup. If you're trading for Ja Morant, you're gonna have to fork over one of those guys. There's just no way. But we'll talk about it and get into it and why. Quite frankly, it's pretty ridiculous that we're having these discussions. I know that people want clicks and they want to stir the pot.
We're in click season, big time.
But it's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. All right, now NBA playoffs last night. Rockets, Warriors, Rockets survive 131-116. You did text me last night, and I kind of agreed with you, kind of didn't. The Warriors gave up very quickly on that game.
They definitely. He threw
Steve
in the towel
Kerr
in the third
in the
quarter.
He didn't play starters in the fourth quarter. He played the bench the entire
quarter. Well, and most of the third. Quarter. Most of the third he didn't play him.
But like part of me understands it, and right. I feel like the Warriors are one of the only teams in the NBA who can sort of get away with that because they've been there, done that before. They have some experience with Steph Curry and Draymond Green. And, you know, you're not at home. The Rockets were fighting their ass off. And you were down by 20-plus points at one point in that game. Jimmy Butler's been a little bit banged up. It sort of felt like a moment where you could, okay, let's sit down, let's relax, let's get back healthy, get a couple of days off, get back to the Bay, and close this series out. Like, it made sense, but I get what you were saying when you texted me. It's like, damn, mid-third quarter, you gave up.
So it wasn't – the reason I texted you wasn't because of the third quarter. It was when they got back within 13
in the fourth.
Early and that's
fourth.
Where I was like, oh, this – because it felt like one of those moments where
– the bench
like
was
a boxing match where it was like, oh, the Rockets are shaky right now, and their starters are in, and they don't have any composure. It was after the fight happened is yes. when I was like – now would be the time to put back in the
then,
guys because it felt like they were on the
then
ropes.
Then you did have in the back of your mind, okay, maybe the starters are cold at this point.
That's
They've been
the
on
thing.
The bench for
that's,
12 minutes.
That's the conundrum that I think the Warriors were in is, yes, you had an opportunity because the bench was electric.
And they were great.
And one of my favorite players in the league, Pat Spencer.
Yes,
brother
Cam Spencer's
of
brother.
Cam Spencer, headbutting Şengün and then walking away in slow motion as if there was like a movie and an explosion was happening behind him was incredible. Just incredible. He headbutted somebody, turned around and walked away like he didn't do anything.
I
loved it so much. But when they came back, the Warriors, their older players had been on the bench for so long. Steph had already taken off his ankle braces. It could have also been risky to throw them back in there. Because one of them could get hurt, and you want to make sure you have them for the rest of the series. So it was just, it's an odd thing to see somebody kind of throw the towel in so early in the NBA playoffs when we have seen this postseason, unfortunately, we've seen a team come back from 29 down. And in the history of postseason, we have seen them teams come back down a lot. And when you have Steph Curry, it can take two or three shots, and all of a sudden you're back in the game. So it was just an odd decision to see. And when they made the run, you could kind of see Kerr and the players and the assistant coaches going through whether or not they wanted to put everybody back in, and they eventually opted not to put him back in. But it's just, he better hope that it doesn't come back to bite him that they threw in the towel so early on this game.
Yes, 100%, 100%. And I do love, I still love, one thing I do miss, the Dylan Brooks experience in Memphis. We can really
he was
really
barking last night.
The one thing I do miss is 4 minutes left, Rockets up by 18. The Rockets are shooting free throws. And Dylan Brooks is in there just punishing people trying to get offensive rebounds on made free throws. I miss that edge. I really do. As much as I know how it ended and he took too many shots and blah, 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 I miss that part of Dylan Brooks. Just every single minute he was on the floor, he is on the floor, he goes balls to the walls. But, yeah, they confused Pat Spencer for Cam Spencer last night, too.
Yeah, the Grizzlies whistle was so bad this season that Cam Spencer got ejected from a game he wasn't even playing in.
You know, I was thinking about it when I saw the scuffle. I'm like, I'm glad you got to sit next to their dad.
Oh, I know where it comes from.
Was that the Heat game?
It was the Heat game, and Cam played well in that game.
Yes, he's, you know, I'm going to ask you this.
Okay.
Having sat next to him for an entire four quarters, do you understand why they are the way they are?
100%.
It's like it makes perfect sense.
Cam, I think he just had a behind the back pass or something. It was an assist, and my little brother was sitting next to his dad, and I look over, and all of a sudden he's just getting like Ron Artest elbow to the chest, and he's just like, oh! And I was like, the dad's absolutely electric. He was talking mess the entire game. I fell in love with him. He was fantastic. It makes 100%. All the sense in the world why Pat and Cam are the way they are. Dogs. Dogs. The Grizzlies, honestly, trade for Pat Spencer. Cam Spencer and Pat Spencer should be on this roster next season. Yeah. And let's just fight everybody.
Yes. All right, now Lakers, Timberwolves, the Wolves. Give the Lakers the gentleman's sweep. 4-1. Handle business. It was 103-96 last night. Now, I'm not going to be the guy that immediately gets into Lakers conversation because the Lakers are knocked out. There was a team that won last night, and that's the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I'm going to tell you right now, take them seriously. Take them very seriously in the Western Conference. Do I think that they would beat the Oklahoma City Thunder in a seven-game series? Not necessarily. But when you look at how that team is made up, they have the depth to do some damage. They have the number one guy to absolutely do some damage, even though he didn't have a good night last night. He was 0-11 from three, but Anthony Edwards can put up 40-50 any given night. You have the biggest, most athletic team in the NBA, quite frankly, when you look at them top to bottom. Rudy Gobert, Julius Randle, you look at Naz Reid, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Like, late in that game last night, I had a little bit of a come to Jesus moment in the idea that, I don't know if you were watching, but Jaden McDaniels fouled out with about 4 minutes to go and the game was up in the air. And I go, okay, that's massive. For any other team, that would be a huge, huge issue. Your best perimeter defender, your guy who gives you optionality on the defensive end, the guy who scored 30 points in a game in this series, he gets knocked out because of his fouls. And I say, okay, that seems like it could be a big deal. And then coming off the bench, you have a guy in Nikhil Alexander-Walker, 6'5", really good perimeter defender, can knock down a three. Like, they just have the right pieces at the right time. And don't forget, they were in the Western Conference Finals a year ago. So I know we didn't come into this playoff run, these Western Conference playoffs, thinking, okay, the Timberwolves can be one of the teams that really push the Oklahoma City Thunder, push the rest of the Western Conference to be the representative in the NBA Finals. But when you watch that series and what they did in dismantling the Los Angeles Lakers, you do have to rethink that. Take this team seriously. And I also love last night Mike Conley with the absolute backbreaking three with about 120 left.
You love to
that
see
was,
it.
That was really fun to see.
You love to see it.
I feel like, you know, Lakers fans certainly probably feel this way. I feel this way. When you watch the Timberwolves, you forget Mike Conley's there until something like that happens.
Yeah,
you forget he's there.
Yeah, because he's not scoring much at all, but he makes things flow. Like, he doesn't have the counting stats, but when you're watching their games, when Mike Conley's in there, things are just moving a lot better because he's just one of the best point guards that we've seen the last 15 years in the NBA.
To your point, he does not make mistakes either.
Right.
You have a guy in Anthony Edwards. You have a guy in Anthony Edwards who makes a fair amount of mistakes, turns the ball over, very high usage. you know, can sometimes when he's having a bad game take you out of the game, but obviously you love when he is scoring at a high level. He usually does that. In that series, Mike Conley had 3 turnovers in 5 games.
That's huge.
And he played right around 25 minutes per night. That's massive for your lead guard. Now, for your lead point guard. I know he doesn't score. I know he doesn't, like, fill up the stat sheet anymore. But to have a guy that's steady for that particular team is it makes a whole bunch of sense, and it's massive. And I compare it to, you know, a few years ago when the Grizzlies were beating them in that first-round series, who was their lead guard for the most part? It was like D'Angelo Russell, right? It's just it's a different feel when Mike Conley's on the floor. He stabilizes Man. Things, even though he does not really pop at all.
When the Grizzlies beat them, they were an all-time dumb team. Yeah. All-time dumb. Carl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell on the floor at the same time. Goodness gracious. There's so many just dumbfounding decisions were happening during that series. So many bad shots when they had a chance to really put the Grizzlies away, and that's why you always felt like you had a chance to come back against them whenever they were in. And it's just, it's wild last night that the Timberwolves won shooting 14.9% from three. Yeah. The Lakers just could not get it together. But the main thing is what we talked about before this series happened. We said, if Rudy Gobert has an impact in this series, the Timberwolves are going to win. That was the key to the series for us. And guess what happened last night? 27 and 24, something we haven't seen, I think, since Wilt Chamberlain. The Lakers turned Rudy freaking Gobert into Wilt Chamberlain last night.
Can I give you a
night.
More one-to-one example of what I saw from Rudy Gobert last night? Prime Dwight Howard is what that looked like at times. Just easy buckets at the rim, not giving you a whole bunch of moves, blocking shots, altering shots, getting drop-offs and finishing at a high level. He's 12 for 15 from the field, but 27 and 24, 9 offensive
That's
boards.
That's absurd.
He was untouchable last night. He was untouchable. And there's a lot of sort of conversations, and we'll talk about them in the Blitz, around the Lakers' defense and why they struggled so much last night. But I there's only one thing that is apparent on why they lost this series the way they did. The Lakers don't have a passable center. They don't have a passable 7-footer. LeBron was forced into playing the 5. And LeBron, you know, mentioned on the challenge of playing center, after the game, he said, no comment. My guy Anthony Davis said what he needed, because Anthony Davis asked the front office to go find a center so he could play the 4. And he was gone the following week. That's what LeBron had to say. So, like,
yeah, LeBron, you had no idea that trade was happening.
Sure. I've seen a lot of people speculate on why the Lakers lost that series. And yes, defense last night was miserable, and Luka was a traffic cone, and LeBron couldn't step up there and defend Rudy Gobert because of the size difference. I get all of that. But it's very simple. They didn't have the bigs to compete
Correct.
With the Timberwolves. And I said that going into the series. That's why I picked the Timberwolves. And I'll put some of this on J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick is not above criticism here.
No, and he needs to stop pretending like he is.
He said going into the game that he was not going to play Jackson Hayes, and they were going to go small, and they were going to do some different things. And Jackson Hayes mentioned after the game he told him that they communicated that. But his refusal to play Jackson Hayes was just strange to me. I understand that Jackson Hayes was terrible in that series, that he was bad. But allowing Rudy Gobert to play like prime Dwight Howard the entire game can't be the answer, right? And I know J.J. Redick said, oh, there's some give and take with lineups I throw out there. If I throw Jackson Hayes on the floor, we're not going to be able to play offense. If I take him off the floor and go small, we're not going to be able to play defense at the same level. But last night when you're watching Gobert do what he's doing, you have to make some changes. And the change that he went with, instead of Jackson Hayes coming into the game, is Maxi Kleber. It was the first, for people that don't know, that was his first game action in a Lakers uniform. If I'm on the bench and I didn't get playing time last night and I look at what J.J. Redick did in playing Maxi Kleber, I want to get the hell out. It's disrespectful as hell. I've helped this team win. Down the stretch, we went 19 and 13 post trade deadline. Maxi Kleber's been off the floor the entire time. You play him in the most crucial elimination game of the year? It's insane to me. It's insane to me. But on top of just not having a center, I think the more apparent thing last night was the Lakers just as a team didn't try to rebound.
No,
like they were away from the rim, not boxing out, and standing around. And to prove my point, let's go back to game four in the second half, because he played that same lineup in the second half, J.J. Redick did, for 24 minutes. Didn't take them out the entire second half. The Lakers played that same lineup, second half of game four. Rebounding battle was 20-20. So they had proven, hey, we can at least give a better effort, but LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Dorian Finney-Smith, Rui, Reeves, none of those guys brought the extra effort. And the Timberwolves owned that part of the game last night. And that's why they ultimately ended up winning. And again, like, to be fair, I don't think the only reason that Rudy Gobert played like that was because there was no center. I do think Luka and LeBron were awful on defense. LeBron was out of position constantly, and Luka couldn't stay in front of anyone. It led to easy dump-off after easy dump-off for Rudy Gobert, lob, that sort of thing. The fourth quarters in this series, fourth quarters, Timberwolves were plus 42.
Yikes.
It's not good. And LeBron James in the fourth quarter, 5 points combined in games four and five.
Not going to do it.
Not going to do it. And you will have, and I saw a little bit of this last night on social media, you're going to have some people saying dumb things about how, you know, LeBron needs to retire because his clutch gene is gone. And well, if you say that, you're ignoring the fact that he was second in the NBA in fourth quarter scoring behind Trae Young. So, like, it was an outlier what he did in games four in game five. Can I get to the real conversation I want to have, though? I'm more interested in how many more times can LeBron talk himself into doing this with this set of circumstances? I understand the Lakers can make some moves this offseason, go get a center, and, you know, Rob Pelinka said that today. But when you consider his situation right now, that Lakers team isn't going to win a championship as they're currently constructed. And they have some flexibility, but they don't have, like, a tremendous amount of flexibility. They don't have a bunch of picks they can trade. They don't have a bunch of draft assets. Player assets are cool, but, well, you know, you would be trading away depth at that point. This is also the first time that LeBron has been eliminated in the first round of the playoffs in back-to-back years in his entire career. He clearly lost steam in the playoffs this season. If you watched him last night, it just didn't look like a guy who felt like they had a chance to win. He was dog tired, didn't want to give the extra effort. And also, let's think about this. He turns 41 in December. And I think if you're looking at the reasons why LeBron could step away from the game right now, there's finally a player that is actively better on his team and has taken over as the guy in Luka Doncic. Luka did what AD could not do when the Lakers had him on their roster. AD was always secondary. He would pop on some games. He's still one of the top 75 players of all time, but LeBron was still the emotional, vocal leader, the player leader, the best player on that team for all intents and purposes. So I'll just say this. Bron isn't the same now. I'm not saying, you know, that he's not great, but his greatness is diminished. He settles for way too many jumpers. He can't get to the rim the same way. And if you have followed his career, like all of us have, what's his best skill? Getting to the rim at will and finishing. No one could be, and in the middle of his career, no one could stop him. And at times, although I do think the first four games of the series against the Timberwolves, he was great defensively. He stuck in there. At times, he's really tough to watch defensively. Last night, really bad. Team low, minus 14 in the plus-minus category. I'm not saying he still isn't great and he can't give good, you know, statistics. He was still, I mean, he was the Lakers' best defender in this series for the most part and averaged 25-9-5 in this series. Like, he's still great. But he's now at the point in his life, in his career, where you don't magically get better. You're going on 41. And I think most of us agree with this sentiment. He hasn't really had anything left to accomplish since 2020. He's got a points record that likely will never be broken. He's got four championships. He's won a championship with every franchise he's played for. I'm of the opinion it's time for him. I don't necessarily think he's going to go off into the sunset after that. Probably has a sour taste in his mouth. He's a competitor. But I think that if we're being honest with ourselves about where the Lakers franchise can go from here, what state he's leaving them in, and where he's at as a player, it doesn't get better from here. And I don't want to see any diminished legacy on the way out. So I'm not saying he's going to retire, but I think it really is time, if I'm being honest with myself.
I don't know. You could argue he was a top 10 guy in the league this year. I don't know if that – so if diminished is, okay, maybe he's a top 25 guy next season. I think really what happened, and he'll never admit this, but we've seen it happen before. He knew they didn't have the team to win.
Right.
So I think that he looked at this playoffs and said, I'm going to compete, but I'm not going to try to do the classic LeBron stuff. And I think that he just knows that they didn't have the roster. They didn't have the team. So he wasn't putting in the effort he probably should have. And that's one of the reasons they lost the series. LeBron just wasn't good, really, overall. He had a couple okay games for LeBron, but overall he just wasn't great in the series. I don't think that means he needs to retire, though.
And let me ask you this. When it comes to the fourth quarter, and obviously he was terrible in fourth quarters in Game 4 and Game 5, so that's fresh on our mind, and maybe it skews my sort of thought process here. Does he have that, especially in playoff basketball, does he have that same level of takeover in him anymore? Because that's largely why most of his championship teams were able to get over top, is because he was just able to stay in the game, stay ready to go. He had his wind about him. He had, you know, great conditioning, which just leaves you after a while. It's just hard to keep up that same level of conditioning. Like, I just looked at this series, and maybe you're right. Maybe he just figured it was a losing cause anyway. He was never going to be able to beat this Timberwolves team. But I looked at those fourth quarters in games 4 and game 5, and that same level of, hey, I can go get this and will my team to win, it just wasn't there. It wasn't there. Now, again, he did have the second most points in the fourth quarter in the regular season. So, like, that's still a thing. He was able to really be good in fourth quarters for most of the season. But this playoff series, it affected my view of LeBron being able to take over like he used to.
I don't know, though, if LeBron should retire just because he can't take over. The whole point of Luka being there is that he doesn't have to do that anymore. And first off, here's one reason he's not. I got $52 million.
Yes.
$52 million sure. Reasons why he's not sure. Going to retire.
Sure.
I don't think he's going to retire. I don't think he should retire. He played at the level of maybe being a top 10 guy in the league this season.
Right.
He didn't get it done in the playoffs. They got bounced, but they didn't have the roster. This offseason, they need to go out there and find a center. If the same problems come up next playoffs and you
then
see you, him.
Then you're going to say step off into the sunset and move on?
I think conversations may begin because his contract will also be up. That's
sure.
Where conversations will really start. But I feel like it's a bit unfair to hold the, if you can't put your entire team on your back at 40, you should retire. I don't think that's necessarily the conversation.
If we're being honest with ourselves.
If we're being honest with ourselves,
he's still
at a high
great.
Level.
He's still right. great, and yeah. I've mentioned that. Every part of his game, though, is diminishing little by little by
no,
little.
No, that's not true.
It's very true.
No, it's not. His shooting's better than it's ever been.
Defensively, it's diminishing. He can't finish at the rim the same level. The takeover's not quite there. We saw the effort start to die as that series went along. The conditioning wasn't the same. I'm not saying he's going to retire. I'm just saying if I'm being real with myself about if there, you know, the time, like what he has to accomplish, what's left in the tank, I look at these next few years and I look at this particular season and how it ended. It's like this may be as good a time as next year or the year after that. Like, I don't know how much is going to change for that Lakers franchise. I don't know how much better they're going to get in the way of potentially competing for a championship.
I think they'll get better.
I just have my doubts. I have my doubts. Now, also, and maybe I'm being a little bit...
He averaged 25, 9, and 6 in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mentioned that.
Let's I think that we're reacting to a couple of bad fourth quarters.
And also, I'm going to tell my truth really quick about, like, maybe this is me being selfish in regards to advocating for this and bringing this up. As a LeBron fan and as a guy who's watched his entire career, the discourse around LeBron outweighs the fun of actually watching him at this point.
I can agree with that. That can be true.
Here's the things. It's forced legacy talk or it's forced hating on a 40-year-old. Neither one does anything for me. And the debates are no fun. LeBron haters are complete cornballs. LeBron lovers no longer, quite frankly, tell the truth. Like, it's just overblown. They have a cop-out, though, because he's 40 years old. That part of it, and dealing with that for 2-3 more years, that part of it sucks to me. And maybe that's selfish. And I can tell you that straight up. Maybe I'm being selfish with that. But the discourse so much outweighs the fun of actually seeing him perform.
That can be true. Yes, I think that can be true. When he's great, it can be fun. But when he has a bad fourth quarter, it is silly. Some of the conversation is silly. I think that after next season, we're going to be on a year-by-year basis. It's going to be, what does his body feel like? Does he think the other kid can make it to the league? Probably not. But yeah. if he thinks that, he might
Sam's
try to stick around.
That. He's a 3-star who didn't start on his high school
right,
team.
Right, right. But
I'm not going to hate on a kid, right. But, you know.
But I think that it makes a lot of sense to try to have a full season of Luka, a full season of a legitimate center on this team, which they have the assets to go get a center. They can make it happen. They're going to do it this offseason. They're going to find a center.
Find a couple.
And next year, when you already have Luka on your team, he's going to be able to take his foot off the gas a little bit during the regular season, and they should still be able to make the playoffs. That is kind of the point of Luka.
See, this is a fair rationalization I'm here for.
And that is why I don't think he – I understand what you're saying is that you want to – because you kind of want to do, like, the greatest we've seen have left at the top recently.
Yes.
Like, Tom Brady, he left when he was at the top of his game and he could still play. There was still some left in the tank.
Right.
I get it. But with LeBron, it doesn't make a lot of sense to retire right now. Next offseason, maybe we're having a different conversation. If they get bounced in the first round again and it's 3 straight years and then he's going to be another year older and he doesn't have a contract – that makes more sense to have the conversation. I just think that with $52 million, with him still performing at a pretty high level for his age, and with the roster that they will have, plus Luka, plus a center, I don't understand why he wouldn't give it another run, at least, to see what happens. Because they do have potential to be a good team next year. Now, that being said, we do need to be honest about LeBron was not good in the playoffs this year by his standards. His standards are also maybe the greatest playoff performer we've ever seen.
100%, yes.
But he wasn't there. The effort wasn't there. The defense, their entire rebounding thing was odd. Getting out-rebounded 54-37 in a game.
It wasn't all just playing small
game,
either. That's the thing. And I mentioned that. Again, game four in the second half, it was 20-20 when they played that same lineup in the rebounding.
And department. When I say that, I think that he probably thought to himself, this team isn't going to get it done anyway. That's not an okay thought. I'm not saying that that justifies his effort level. I'm just saying I think that may have been what happened. Because we've seen it before.
Okay, let me ask you that then. Have we ever seen that from LeBron?
Yes.
Previously in his career?
Yes.
What year are we talking about?
The Celtics, right before he went to the Heat.
Okay.
He gave up in that series. He knew they didn't have enough, and he gave up in that series. We've seen it before.
Right. Okay.
We kind of saw last year.
Yeah, so... we'll see.
It's frustrating. And like,
you know his answer, though, last night was,
I got to talk to my family. Like, his thing about...
it's going to be a yearly thing when he's going to give that answer
every
year.
The thing he did about AD last night was silly. He's dramatic. It can be annoying. It's the one thing that comes with being a LeBron fan is you have to accept the, oh, come on. Like, his quote about AD, dude, you were aware of the trade. Stop pretending like you weren't. You would still trade AD for Luka 10 out of 10 times. Anthony Davis doesn't change this series for y'all. He doesn't. The Timberwolves were a better team. They had the size. They couldn't do anything with it. They had the defense, and they had a bona fide number one in Anthony Edwards. They beat you, and they would have beaten you even if you had Anthony Davis.
Yep.
Retool this offseason. Go get a center. Get healthy. Get Luka healthy and see what happens.
All right, now Ja Morant's future with the Memphis Grizzlies is being called into question by the national media. I want to break down what we have seen today, the conversation around it, and what the Grizzlies are going to do going in the future, going into the future with Ja Morant. That's all going to be next. With the way the last few years have gone, we have gotten used to, here in Memphis, some Ja trade rumors, speculation, national media trying to force him out of town. Now, with all that trade speculation, it came to a head in the middle of the season this year when Ja was injured. Now, what we do know to be fact about that trade speculation is Zach Kleiman vehemently denied it and said it's absolutely nonsense. If you go back to midseason, when he was asked about it, he said, "I can't blame other executives for fantasizing about us trading Ja, but it's just that fantasy. We are not trading Ja. Continue to underestimate Ja, this team and this city, and we will let our performance on the floor speak for itself." As we got to exit interviews, the same types of questions came up, and Zach Kleiman doubled down on that same sentiment. But what that has not stopped is more Ja trade speculation. Today at CBS Sports, you had Ashley Nicole Moss, who I respect very greatly, does a good job over at CBS Sports as an analyst. She talked about where Ja could potentially fit and where he should land. Let's go ahead and play that sound, Connor. Okay, so if we're talking about the rationalization that Ashley Nicole Moss gave, I don't get any of it. I don't think he'd be a good fit for the Magic. Some of the rationalization she gave, they need help with three-point shooting. Yeah, Ja, no. That's never been a part of his game. We want it to be a part of his game, whether it be mid-range or three-point shooting. But what we've seen with a lot of teams, especially when you get into playoff scenarios, if you get to that high pick and roll, they play under the screen because they're not really afraid of Ja shooting the basketball at a very high rate. She also mentioned, well, he's a ball mover, and he's really a guy who can set up offense. We have also seen that Ja, while she also said this, he's a traditional point guard, he's not a traditional point guard. He's a scoring point guard, scoring first point guard. And we've seen maximizing him, look at the equal opportunity offense this year, maximizing him is not using him as a ball mover. So I fully reject her idea of the Orlando Magic, but I think what I'm trying to prove the point of is the Ja Morant trade speculation is out there. And I've actually, and I don't know about you, Connor, I've been approached by multiple Grizzlies fans who ask me about Ja. Is he really as untouchable as you make it seem?
I've gotten many attacks.
On the show.
Many attacks.
And while I look at Ja and I look at the injuries and I look at the missteps he's had the last 3 years, I do think that conversation could come up eventually. That conversation being had now, though, is just tremendously too early. When you look at Ja in this particular season, I don't think anybody can argue he was the most valuable piece on this Grizzlies team. Jaren Jackson Jr. had a career year. He was great. Not so great in the playoffs. The offense devolved. It was weird. Desmond Bane was still great. But when you look at the difference between Ja on and Ja off the floor, the Grizzlies were 10 games above 500 when Ja played in his 50 games. They were 4 games above 500 when he was off the floor. He makes a difference when you're playing really good teams because he can go finish games in the fourth quarter where I don't think Desmond Bane or Jaren Jackson Jr. have the same ability. Do you give up a little bit on the defensive end with Ja? Absolutely. But the idea is to surround him with good enough wing defenders and with a Jaren Jackson Jr. and a Zach Edey to make all of those defensive issues go away. And I thought that at times this year he tried to take some steps in the right direction on the defensive side of the ball. He still can get knockaways and steals and get to the other end of the floor. He runs better than anybody in the National Basketball Association. But when I get asked those questions, I just find it a little bit unnerving because I think there's maybe a bit of a lack of understanding when it comes to the type of player, type of persona, type of face of basketball that Ja Morant is. I think you could trade away Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. within reason and find some guys to replace those roles within reason. You may not get the exact same thing. You may give up a little bit on offense or defense, but you would find a way to replace those guys. They're not necessarily the face of the franchise here in Memphis. They're not guys that sell all of the tickets in the world here in Memphis. But Ja Morant is top 10 in social media views. I know that doesn't mean all that much to people. He's a guy who clearly wins games at a very high level. He's a guy who can light up the scoreboard at any given moment. He's a guy who sells more jerseys and puts butts in the seats when he is active and playing. If you're talking about trading away that guy, what I want to caution people with is the fact that if you trade away that guy, the type of persona he is, the amount of social media views he gets, the eyeballs he brings to the city of Memphis, that goes away. And to be able to replace that type of figure in this city, it's worse than just easier said than done. I would put it at the borderline of impossible, right? To be able to trade and find a guy who can be the face of the franchise like John Morant. And I know he has missteps, and I know people are tired of just sort of the up and down nature, the roller coaster ride that is John Morant. But I want to caution people from thinking that he is an expendable or not untouchable piece. I think at this moment where we stand, and according to Zach Kleiman in this front office and this franchise, he is the most untouchable player on this roster, bar none. You cannot replace Ja Morant. I think it is way easier to replace the other two in this big three if you do want to field calls. I think where the Grizzlies should be right now, field calls on Jaren and Dez if you feel the need to. You don't have to make a trade. But if anybody calls about Ja, unless Giannis Antetokounmpo's on the other line or somebody like that, I just don't think that's a call worth taking.
I also, even if it is like that, I think that you made a good point there. Who are you trading Ja for? Because I'm sorry, Orlando, I'm not trading anybody that you have for Ja Morant. I'm just not doing it. And real quick, Ja is a career 31% shooter from three.
Yes.
For the regular season, he shot 30%.
Yeah.
During the postseason, he shot 25%.
Magic need help with 3-point shooting.
Bring in Ja Morant. He's not fixing your 3-point shooting.
Right.
He's also not the type of guy that you want a free-flowing offense with. You have to run pick-and-rolls with Ja to maximize him because you said he is a scoring-first point guard. He's an incredible passer when he wants to be. We saw it for half the season before he got injured, before he got undercut. He was having one of the best passing seasons we'd really seen from a point guard, but he was doing it while also scoring. That's why in November, December, we were like, okay, this team might have something, and then the injury bug came and swept it all away, and then we started seeing the holes in the roster during that as well. I thought what was also interesting during this segment, they put up a graphic of Ja on the Magic.
Yes.
And it was
Jalen Suggs, Paolo Banchero, and Franz.
And it was like, okay, so who are you trading to the Grizzlies?
I know what I did notice? They put Wendell Carter Jr. He was out of there. What's a package of Wendell Carter Jr., Cole Anthony, and a couple of picks?
You think that's
going to get Ja Morant?
No,
I think that won't get it done.
It's not going to get it done. So, no, I do not believe Ja would get traded to the Orlando Magic. I don't believe Ja is going to get traded at all, and I don't think Ja should get traded because anybody that you're trading for doesn't make a ton of sense if Ja's not on the roster. Like, why would you be making a big move if it's not to pair them with Ja Morant right now? Like, if you're, like, for instance, we talked about Giannis yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not trading Ja for Giannis because I'm not doing that. The point of it would be to match two superstar players
together. You need a big fish, though, is the point I was making when
I
brought up Giannis.
Right. Like, that's why I think we are at least a year away from doing Ja Morant trade talks. If we have another season of injury, a disappointing playoff, things aren't working, all of this drama, then maybe you begin to have conversations. But we are at least a year away, and I agree with you. The Grizzlies have been in Memphis for 25 years, and they've had one player like
this.
They've
never had a player like Ja Morant.
To get another player like Ja, you would probably have to bottom out. Are you wanting to bottom out? No. You have a team right now that can be competitive. You might have to make some tough decisions this offseason to make them have that leap. And if you have to make those tough decisions, then you have to do it because you've got to figure out how far Ja can take you and take this team. He's got the ability to do it when he's healthy. We saw in the playoffs this year, he almost won them a game before he got undercut. He has the ability to take this team. You've just got to make sure the roster around him makes sense and can maximize him.
And Connor, I think this is my truth when it comes to Ja Morant. If he ever played for another franchise outside of Memphis, I don't think it would be about play on the floor. I don't think it would be about, you know, all the off-the-floor stuff. I think it would be injuries that would force the hand of the Memphis Grizzlies eventually to make that a reality.
Right.
I don't think it has anything to do with him on the floor, though. He is still sensational when he plays basketball.
He's a winning basketball player.
And
when
he's a
healthy.
Winning basketball
he's just,
player.
He unfortunately has not been healthy.
He
but
missed 32 games.
But like we talked about, a lot of those injuries, they're not his fault.
No.
They're just, good Lord, how many times is he going to get undercut?
But
he gets cracked by a screen he doesn't see coming.
I think also in the back of all of our minds, if we were given truth serum, he is a high-flying 6-foot three-point guard, and he flies around and falls on the ground all the time. That does lend itself to real questions about his long term and you know longevity as a face of this franchise.
That's very true.
But again, I don't think that a Ja Morant trade would be because of play on the floor. I think it's all centered on what do you think about his outlook from an injury standpoint. If you feel like he cannot stay on the floor on a consistent basis, that's why you would make a move like that. That's why you would feel calls on Ja Morant. But other people in the national media will continue to talk about this. I'll tell you right now, it's not a reality. It's not a reality.
Especially to the Orlando Magic.
And to the people that keep asking me about it, I get why you're asking.
I understand
but
it.
I don't think you grasp the full picture of Ja Morant and the type of superstar he is. And the type of persona and the eyeballs he brings to the city and the butts he puts in the seats.
That matters.
That matters to an NBA franchise.
You know who she was describing? Trae Young.
She was.
That's
Trae Young
the
would
player.
Make a lot more sense.
That would he'd make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
A lot more
Ball
sense.
Ball mover, leader in assists.
Shooter.
Knocks down threes. Yeah. That's who she's talking
That's who she's talking about.
Yeah. That was weird. It was the whole point of bringing that sound in here was not necessarily to, you know, say he belongs on the Magic, although we put that to bed. It was more to talk about the idea out there that Ja is available. He's, to me, anything but available to other teams.
We're not there yet. I think that they might be taking calls on a Jaren or a Bane. They're not taking calls on Ja yet.
Agreed.
You have to trade. Basically, it's basically like you got to trade one of those guys first, or maybe both of them, to see what happens before you trade Ja.
Yes, I am in full agreement there. Full agreement. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. Get to hour number two. Jeff Calkins will join on the other side. He's from the Daily Memphian, of course, and the Jeff Calkins Show. So we'll catch up with him right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.